Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Araqi Voices. This is your host, Hassan Haddad. Araqi Voices is a podcast that showcases authentic perspectives and insights about current developments in Iraq. Araqi Voices is produced by 1001 Araqi Thoughts. This week, Iraqis headed to the polls and voted in the country's national parliamentary election. As we are recording shortly after the publication of the results, I want to preface this episode by saying that what we are about to discuss is based on preliminary results put out by the Independent High Electoral Commission, or IHEC. I want to focus on what happened during Election Day and what are the next steps from a technical point of view and also from a political point of view. To do so, I'm joined once again by Ali Al-Mawlawi, who specializes in Iraq's political economy, and Mohammed Al-Wa'ili, contributor to 1001 Iraqi Thoughts, focused on development and reform in Iraq. Gentlemen, let's start with Election Day. Ali, take us through what happened on Tuesday, November 11th.
So to start off with, the biggest surprise, of course, is the voter turnout. I don't think anyone really expected the turnout to be that high at 56%. For context, the 2021 parliamentary election turnout was 43.5%. So there are lots of theories as to why this is. And I think at this point, it probably isn't wise to speculate because we just don't have enough data, or the data really needs to be analyzed very carefully before we can really start to understand what happened. I would say that there were actually, in hindsight, some clues as to the voter turnout being higher than last time. The first is, if you look at the turnout for the provincial council elections of 2023, which was the same electoral system as we have for these elections, the turnout was 41%. Now that for local elections is actually not too bad, especially given the fact that the Sadrists weren't participating, in addition to the fact that the Sudani coalition wasn't competing in those elections either. So that was the first clue. The second clue was that the turnout for the early voting, that's for the security forces, was very, very high, 82.5%. If you compare that to 2021, the early voting turnout was around 69%. And the third clue, I would say, is on the day of election, IHEC released the midday report, which detailed the turnout. And at that point, at noon of election day, the turnout was around 24%. And again, if you compare that to the midday report of 2021, that turnout was 19%. So if you look at these signs together, there was some indication, at least, that turnout was going to be much higher than expected. But as I said, 56% is considerably high, given the fact that the Sadrists were not participating. And so I think at this point, we need to spend a bit more time, once the data is fully released, analyzing it and trying to figure out what really was behind this trend.
In addition to the high turnout, the other thing that surprised me is how calm and orderly that day went across Iraq's provinces. There were a couple of videos here and there of some security forces, especially in Kirkuk, but nothing major. Nothing in terms of political violence, nothing in terms of polling stations being targeted either for violence, sabotage, even by those who chose to sit these elections out. They did so in a very civil manner, and that was really heartening.
Yeah, in addition to this, I think those who were thinking that the political process is going to dwindle down over the years got actually surprised. The higher participation rate, I think, brought new spirit and hope for the political process, and it emphasized the fact that Iraqis, despite all the shortcomings in the political system, are still interested in it and want actually this to go on. And through the higher participation rate, a message was sent that this is the system that Iraqis want and they are not thinking about any other ways of governance. And that by itself, I think, is a huge win. We will have opposition inside the parliament, which is something healthy, and we are going also to have an opposition outside the parliament. And given how those outside the parliament, those who do not basically chose to vote, behaved. I think there's good hope that their opposition will remain peaceful and in support of the general process, but not necessarily involved in it as before. So this was an important day, I think. And as we were saying in the previous episodes, there is something different about these elections and people are enthusiastic to take part.
When it comes to the participation rate, one of the things that I'll be looking out for is to see when IHAC puts out numbers on the total number of young people that voted. I think this is going to be an interesting data point, given that the last parliamentary elections held 4 years ago in 2021 means that there are about 4 million eligible voters that could have participated in these elections. And one bit of anecdotal evidence I have is a friend of mine whose daughter registered for university last year. I saw her yesterday after she voted, and she's only 19. And she said that, "I didn't even know that I had registered to vote and ended up getting my registration card, because when I was being registered for university," and she is enrolled in a private institution, not a public state-owned university, she was actually put through the IHEC voter registration process and had her photo taken and her fingerprints taken and all of that. And a few months later, she was able to pick up her voter ID card. And so it is important to note that both of her parents went and voted, and so she physically went along with her parents and also participated. But that'll be interesting to see just how many young people actually took part in the elections.
Yeah, that would be interesting to understand. I wonder whether that sort of demographic data will ever be released, though. The other issue, I think, is that the number of candidates at this time around is twice as many as what it was in 2021. And that's because the electoral system has changed. As we've discussed in the past, it went from an SNTV system to a proportional representation system. And under PR, the system encourages electoral lists to field as many candidates as possible. That's how you maximize your seat share. And so that may be a possible reason or contributing factor that led to the higher participation rate. But as I said, I think we still need to take our time and really try to crunch the numbers and figure out what was going on.
I agree with Mohammed that it's a very healthy sign that despite a conscious boycott movement to stop people from going and participating and voting, there were millions of people who participated across the country. And that, I think, is a very healthy sign for Iraq's nascent democracy. And it's something that I hope will continue.
I do hope that too. What I also hope is that IHEC changes its the way it does business and announces actually the results. I think these elections are being watched by Iraq's neighbors and internationally, as well as followed by Iraqis. And then you have this lengthy process of announcing the results on TV without doing any like useful summaries, for instance, or just putting everything on PDF files and then sending them out and then letting people sort of share it on the WhatsApp and different platforms. And the website itself, that's a big problem. It has always been. It does not work for people outside of Iraq, and even people inside of Iraq had difficulty accessing it. I had at least 3 years to prepare for these elections, and these are the fundamental minimum capacities that IHEC should actually possess. And this sort of, like, in my opinion, takes a little bit away from the experience itself of voting and awaiting the results. They need to be presented in useful ways, and analysts and journalists and everyone else should have access to them as fast and as easy as possible. I think IHEC disappoints in this area, to be honest.
And I think it's worth adding that election results do matter. You know, sometimes there's a perception that these election results are inconsequential because at the end of the day, the blocs will go behind closed doors and hash out a deal for the government formation. But that's not an accurate way of looking at it. Election results do impact the trajectory of the formation process. They really set the parameters for what is possible in terms of the shape of the next government. And while they don't necessarily dictate the entirety of that process, that's actually expected because of the sheer number of coalitions and electoral lists that are winning seats, which is quite unusual compared to other parliamentary democracies. And so by virtue of the fact that there isn't a single party list that is winning a majority, it of course makes the negotiation process for forming the government much more complicated. And of course that requires a lot of horse trading and negotiations behind closed doors. Having said that, I think that these elections in particular are going to be very consequential, primarily because the prime minister clearly wants a second term. And so his chances of securing a second term are heavily dependent on how well he has done in these elections. And this is something that I think that we should explore a little bit more.
I agree with you both. IHEC should be able to come out with a PDF and put it on their website and share it instead of putting us through a very arduous procedure where we're watching online and we've got our phones in our hands and we're getting screenshots of screens. And it's honestly disheartening. So let's hope that IHEC is able to get with the 21st century and up its game. In addition to the IHEC press conference and putting out the results, we also had the release of a recorded statement by Prime Minister Soudani. All of us had a chance to listen to it. Mohammed, why don't you tell us a little bit about what he said?
Yeah, so he was basically standing with his party members, and even though this is basically on state TV, he congratulated the Iraqi people, but also his supporters. And while I would think that this should be about the electoral process itself and all the Iraqis, but he tried sort of to mention that his party is open to dialogue and that the political parties should respect the people's choice. And then he sort of pointed out that the high turnout is actually due to the people having more trust in the process because his government had a platform and a program that emphasized economic growth and development, which I think basically is his own conclusion and not necessarily the truth. But it seems that he thinks that he has a mandate to form the next government, and thinking that also his bloc will be sticking together, which is not necessarily a given. And he was already, I think, starting the negotiation process, but announcing it on state TV.
Yeah, so optics are very important at this early stage, because if you have ambitions to secure a second term, you have to project this impression that you are going to lead negotiations to form the next government. And the fact is that his coalition, the Reconstruction Development Coalition, only won 46 seats. The expectation generally before elections was that his coalition would win about 50 seats. In my view, I think he would have needed at least 70 seats to have a decent chance of entering negotiations with the coordination framework in order to form the next government. I think his chances are quite slim. But of course, you know, the fact that he has issued this statement immediately after the announcement of the election results really reflects what his intention is, which is to ensure that he remains at the forefront of any negotiations to form the next government.
One thing we need to bear in mind is that decision of who is going to be the next prime minister of Iraq, whether it's Prime Minister Soudani getting a second term or somebody else. This is going to be discussed within the coordination framework. And we, as per every government post-2003, will have another coalition. And this is a process that takes some time. Hamza, who's not with us tonight, has mapped out government formation processes since post-2003. And the timeline is around 6 months to form a government, given all the horse trading that needs to take place. Now, 2021 was a bit of an outlier because it took us just over 1 year to form the Soudani government. So how the next few months play out is going to be very important, and it will be interesting to see what takes place.
Yeah, so in terms of government formation timeline, It is possible that this time it could be a quicker process. There have been indications, most recently by Faik Zeidan, the head of the Supreme Judicial Council, who said that he thought that this process would be smoother this time around. He suggested that it would take about 4 months, which is the actual time allotted within the constitution to form a government. I do think that it really depends on how the coordination framework reacts to the results of these elections. They could convene immediately and lay out a vision for how they intend to nominate the next prime minister, whether that is Sudani or someone else. I think that as soon as we have a clear indication about that process, then we will have a better idea about how long the process of forming the government might actually take. Personally, I think that what the framework will opt to do, as they did last time, is to declare themselves the largest parliamentary bloc, and that would give them the constitutional right to nominate the prime minister. I think once we have clarity on this issue, then it will become a lot easier to figure out who the potential candidates are for the premiership.
So one point of clarification that's important here is the month-long process of government formation. 3 weeks of that is for the Supreme Court to ratify the preliminary results that were published by IHEC tonight. This, of course, gives time for people who feel that they've been wronged or that something took place to file lawsuits and to have their grievances heard by the judiciary and have a ruling made before those results are ratified. Another point, I want to go back to what Mohammed said about the coalitions and the strength of these political blocs as they went into the elections. One important lesson that I learned from the 2018 election was when incumbent Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi ran the Victory Alliance, and he got similar numbers to what Prime Minister Sudani got tonight, mid-40s. But weeks after the elections, once it was clear that he wasn't going to get a second term, that coalition actually disintegrated. And the total number of people that identified themselves as being part of the Victory or Nasser coalition were in the teens. And so this is something that needs to be watched, because while Prime Minister Sudani's coalition was vast and they did really well on election day, and they seem to be the, quote, winners of these elections, the glue with which this coalition is held is going to be tested in the coming days and weeks.
Yeah, and just to reiterate again, optics are really important at this early stage. So it's not just about how many seats Sudani's coalition has won. It's also about how many votes Sudani has personally won, given that he ran in Baghdad, because often that can signal a sort of popular appeal for an incumbent. Sudani won 92,000 votes, which is, I think, a lot less than many expected. Halbousi came second, in fact. He won 72,000 votes. And then Maliki won 69,000 votes. So I think, given the fact that there isn't a lot of distance between him and two other prominent political figures, that does also undermine his optics. You know, bear in mind, for instance, that Maliki in 2014 won around 720,000 votes. So these sorts of things are really important when Sudani is trying to project himself as a frontrunner for the premiership. And I think at this point, he has a very difficult chance of convincing the coordination framework primarily, but also the Sunni and Kurdish blocs to form an alliance with him.
Important to add that when Maliki got more than 720,000 votes in 2014, he did not secure the third term that he was looking for. And Haider al-Abadi, with 5,500 votes, ended up becoming prime minister. So it's important to note that the highest vote getter is not necessarily going to be the next prime minister. It's all about the ability to make a good show, as you said, in the optics, but also the horse trading and making a deal.
Yeah, so as Ali points out, definitely the optics will play an important role, but not, I think, the main role. Sudan's government, just like Khadami's government, is known for its smart use of media. But media power goes only so far. At the end, I think the main issue is whether he can keep his coalition intact. The thing about the other coalitions, especially the Shia coalitions, is that they are ideologically close and they do not have big issues quickly forming a big coalition just like they did in the past. Whereas with Sudani, most of these people who joined him in the coalition do not necessarily are operating on a mutual ideological views or platforms. Maybe they agree with him on the fact that there needs to be more focus on reconstruction and development. But I think all other political parties are realizing now that because of the stability we had, that this is going to be the operandus mundi forward, that any government who will come to power needs to work on reconstruction and investment. And I think that the other parties have in their pocket a lot of options, and that it's not only Sudan who can pull something like this off. So it goes back to how cohesive he can keep his coalition. And this needs to be watched closely.
Ali, if you can talk to us a little bit about the other parties and how they fared during the election.
So there are some interesting trends. For instance, Mohamed Halbousi's Taqaddum party has been able to maintain dominance within the Sunni sphere, but they have secured less seats than they did back in 2021. So my count is that they've won 33 seats as opposed to 37 back in 2021. Now, Halbousi throughout the election campaign hinted that he may not necessarily be seeking the speakership of parliament, that he may possibly have his eyes set on the presidency. Whether he really attempts to secure this is uncertain. I think had he won around 40 seats, he would have had a good chance of making that case. I think at this point, he may probably be happy with just securing the speakership.
And on that note, do you think he will seek the speakership for himself again?
100%. He will definitely want to secure the most senior position for the Sunni factions. I think that if he can get the speakership, that'll be good enough at least to maintain his dominance. But I do think that he is a lot more ambitious than that. I think he, as we've discussed in the past, this concept of za'ama, he does certainly seek to become the za'im of the Sunnis, the sort of uncontested leader. And I don't think that he's necessarily managed to do that this time around. However, his vote share in Nainua was very impressive. And he has clearly been able to extend far beyond his home base of Anbar.
So we've focused a lot on the big parties. Talk to us about some of the smaller parties and independents and how they did.
So the primary coalition that was aligned with the Tishreen movement was the Bedil Alliance. And they have seemingly fared very poorly. I think they've only won two or three seats. Interestingly, Ishraqat Kanun, which is another one of these parties that emerged back in 2021 that has its core base in the central and southern parts of Iraq, they have actually improved their seat gains. So they won six seats back in 2021, and now they have seemingly won eight seats. So that is, I think, an interesting model because they have deliberately stayed out of the limelight throughout the past 4 years, and yet they've still managed to secure a significant victory, I would say. And that may be, moving forward, the kind of model to try to replicate for these new emerging parties. Obviously, we've got the example of Imtidad, which did outstandingly well back in 2021. They actually won 300,000 votes altogether. They secured nine seats back then. And that party has now disintegrated. It actually didn't even run in this election. Their MPs in parliament, most of them ended up joining the Sudani coalition.
Including their leader, Ala al-Rikabi.
So he didn't even run in this election. He decided to stay out of the vote, which says a lot about the challenges of newly emerging parties and how they're able to maintain cohesion. You know, it's a very difficult process of trying to stay true to your principles while also having to be pragmatic inside parliament, cutting deals in order to survive. And I think Imtidad found it very, very difficult to balance the two. And that really led to a leadership crisis within the party.
The other reason why I think these smaller parties are interesting to watch, because this model seeks, it seems, organic growth. What they are trying to do is they are trying to basically build a platform and grow gradually as opposed to form a quick coalitions. And the fact that it is still there is a good indicator for this. And I think that if it takes part in the next elections, then it gains more seats, even if it's a small number of seats. This proves the theory that these specialists, Jagat Kanun, tries to have an organic growth rather than politicking and trying to join other bigger coalitions from the beginning. However, these smaller coalitions are interesting to watch because they can also become kingmakers, especially when the negotiations are tight and only a few seats are needed to form basically the government. Then what these smaller coalitions decide will change everything. Definitely, this needs to be closely watched.
And watch we will. As things progress in terms of post-election political action, we will be sure to reconvene and record once again another episode. So I want to thank you both for joining me today for this great conversation. That's it for this week's episode. Be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify to receive notifications about a new episode from Araqi Voices. Until next time, take care.